Hi, I'm Helen. Welcome to another episode of Dose of Pharma. Today, we're joined by Paul Wang, who is a center manager and principal scientist at Medicines Manufacturing Innovation Center, MMIC of Monash University, and also a government-appointed member of the board of directors at Racing Analytical Services Limited, RASL. We'll be discussing the opportunities and challenges of research in industry versus academia. So to begin with, Paul, would you please be able to tell us a bit about yourself, about what you do, and how you get to where you are today?
Sure, Helen. Thanks for the invitation to speak to everybody today. My name is Paul Wynne. I'm the Centre Manager for the MMIC based out of Monash University at Parkfield here in Melbourne, and also operating from a laboratory based at the Australian Synchrotron in Clayton. My current role is to liaise with the centre's clients from industry. They're clients that are looking for research services and support activities in the development of their new products or innovations. My career has really been almost entirely within industry. A lot of the companies I've worked for have been either not-for-profit or family-owned businesses, so not the conventional big business type industries. I've actually come full circle. I'm talking to you from an office in Monash's campus at Parkville at the moment. And many years ago, back in 1983, my first job out of university was in the same campus, working for the Institute of Drug Technology. So that was my starting position. And I was lucky to become, I was employed into a role that involved medicinal chemistry, but also consulting to a large number of industry-based clients. And that job sort of set me on the trail of working with industry rather than working in a purely academic environment. So I was based then, and I'm based now in a university, but my clients and my interactions on a day-to-day basis are really largely with industry people. From IDT, I'll talk probably a little bit more about first job syndrome and becoming tired of the first job or developing itchy feet as we move on. But after a few years with IDT, I moved on to a role with Racing Analytical Services as a forensic scientist. And I stayed with that company for just over 15 years. Reached midlife syndrome, which is fairly common for a lot of people as well. So I stayed there for a long time as principal scientist and head of research before moving across to SGE Analytical Sciences, who are an Australian manufacturer of chromatography consumables and equipment. So I went from forensic chemistry, dealing with blood, urine, tissues, and other specimens, into an industry that was working with glass surfaces, metal surfaces, and chromatography media. So there was a big learning curve for me, but also that there was a lot of transferable skills going from one job to the next. After 6 years with SGE, I was, I suppose, headhunted into a role with Shimadzu Australia as a territory manager and a mass spectrometry specialist. And again, 6 years. 6 years seems to be my interval with a lot of companies. But after 6 years, I moved to Shimadzu, worked with Shimadzu to develop and introduce mass spectrometry in their style to the Australian market. And from there, I was asked to come and join the MMIC and run the centre. So my current role is really customer focused. I design projects with customers to meet their particular industry needs. So all of my customers are industry participants, but they're not doing pure research. They're not doing academic research. Their research activities, they bridge that R&D, the research and development divide. But it is work that is designed to solve problems or innovate around existing products or develop new products for industry. So there's commercial outcomes tied to what we do.
Thank you. Wow, that's fantastic. It sounds like you've gained like a very broad knowledge because like your starting position was sort of like research, but in more like in academia and medicine or chemistry. And then you slowly moved into industry and doing forensic research and then like glass and surfaces and then work for Shimizu to do mass spectrometry. I just wanted to ask, like, what is the difference between research in academia and in industry? And then how was the transition look like when you moved from one to another? So was there any sort of like culture shock or anything that you find challenges for you?
I consider that I've always worked in research for industry. My educational background was from RMIT when it was still RMIT, not RMIT University, so I am that old. And the basis of the courses that were operating out of RMIT at the moment, I've studied applied chemistry, they were taught by people who had come from industry. And so the courses were very industrial in their thinking. I'm sure that shaped the way I think, and a lot of my early mentors were the academics, the head of department at RMIT, Applied Chemistry. I went from my undergraduate course. I was one of the first two students who was direct entry into the RMIT Master of Applied Science course in the Applied Chemistry discipline. Prior to myself and my colleague starting that course, the Master of Applied Science in that Institute of Technology environment was seen as a way for people to come from industry and achieve higher qualifications or more specialized training. So I was at the sort of time when the Institutes of Technology were undergoing something of a transformation. So have I ever been working on academic research? I suspect not. Because I am what most people would call an intellectual or a thinker, I spent a lot of my career in industry imagining that I was an academic and thinking I was in the wrong place. You know, I think, well, you know, here I am amongst all of these engineers who are working with molten glass, and I'm speaking like I'm straight from a university lecture theatre. You know, I probably belong in a university. And it really wasn't until this recent, the most recent appointment, where I've come back to a university environment with all the years of experience and knowledge of life in general that I've got, and seen academic research happening and worked alongside academic researchers, that I had that watershed moment of realizing I'm actually not an academic at all. I'm a thinker. I'm a different sort of scientist to a lot of people who work in industry, but I'm certainly not an academic in the way I approach my work. I'm actually an industry type researcher. And if I look at my employment history, all the people I've worked for, all of the people I've interacted with, that history has been building up. You know, the roots for that industrial approach to research was set way back when I was doing my undergraduate work by the people that were teaching me. And so there's no transition for me, really. I've moved between organizations, but I've probably never done academic research.
Right. That's something very interesting to know. It sounds like at first you thought that you had like a mix of both, and then you might be better in academia, but then as you go, then you realize that you're more like an industry research rather than like in academia.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I'll probably rile some academics who might listen to this in saying what I do, but the thing to me that really differentiates industry research from academic research is the approach that the team takes. So there's a couple of aspects to it. There's the approach that the team takes, and there's the endpoints. industry research. I can't really speak about what the endpoints of academic research are because I've never been in that environment.
Yeah.
But the endpoints for industry-based research are always very pragmatic. You're working for a business, you're funded to do a particular job, and the endpoints are, we want this new idea to work. We want to produce a new product or a new offer a new service that is going to generate income for the company. Now, you can be a sort of thinking of that in terms of profitability and money, wealth, or you can think of it in terms of, I could be generating aspects of this business which will employ new people and create economic benefit to the local economy. So there's all different aspects of industry research, but the research is not a pure stream. It is driven by that need to get to the end point. So all of the nice things that are discovered along the way, if they're not going to produce financially beneficial outcomes for the company, then they get cut. So the research work is never perfect. Things get left undone. You only do the tasks that need to be done to get to the result that's required, or to decide that the result that's required can't be achieved and that you've got to look for a different way. The other aspect of working in industry research is that there's not really an element of personal glory or personal achievement. Now, achievement's not the right word. There's definitely personal achievement, but there's not that aspect of personal accolade. Academic research is done for the benefit of the company or for the benefit of the brand that is funding the research. And so there's that change in thinking between what I see of academic research and what I see of industry research. Industry researchers are loyal to the brand of business that they're working for. So, you know, if you're working for Dosa Pharma as a business, the research work that you do for Dosa Pharma is geared around the team that works for Dosa Pharma and Dosa Pharma's marketing ambitions. So we do work that benefits the business, and the success of the research that's done is a success for the brand, not necessarily recognized as a success for the individual. For some people, that's a great thing to be able to be part of that team environment where people contribute to research that's often designed from the ground up. So there's a lot of thinking and iterative design can go in. Engineers working with scientists, working with accountants, sales teams, business development people, all coming together to make a new idea or a new concept, something that is profitable. And those sort of communal or team efforts are not necessarily as well recognized or easy to see in academic research. Academic research will tend to be more driven by publications, personal recognition of academic achievement. So it's a far more combative environment. The combat in research for industry is company versus company or company versus market. It's not as much individual versus individual. And to me, that's a really pleasant environment to be working in. I'm not a combative person, so I don't want to be working where I'm guarding my research against my peers. I want to be collaborative. I want to share. And that's one of the joys I've had in working in research in industry. I'm surrounded by a team of people I can share with, and they can feed ideas into me. I can feed ideas back out to them. So that connection between individuals is really important as a driver for me working in industrial research.
Right, absolutely agree. Just wondering, what was the thing that first drew your interest towards research and then later on research in industry?
I think one of the things that comes with age and experience, everybody, particularly in science, is I want to do research. And I would challenge people who are saying, I want to do research. You know, I've done my bachelor degree, or maybe I've worked on my higher qualification, or I'm enrolling in honours and have this ambition to go on. What I would challenge them to think about is, what is research? You know, what is my personal definition of research? And the personal definition of research can change the way you describe research work. So, you know, I talked just before about industry versus academia. That's from the perspective of my definition of research. And other people would say, well, you know, Paul's definition is just not right. It doesn't fit with what I consider research to be. But I think what you've got to think about is, what is your definition of research? Why do you think it's so great? A lot of people consider that research is wonderful because there's no rules, or because it's not repetitive. And that's quite often just not the case. There are plenty of people that I've worked with, really, really smart people, excellent at what they do, that don't enjoy research work at all. They love quality control. Now, to me, I can personally think of nothing more horrific than going to work and doing quality control every day. But that's me. So that self-awareness that allows you to say, what is it that I actually enjoy doing, allows you to work out whether you are a research person. Research is more about the ability to work in an environment where you don't know the outcome. So, you know, there's a degree of risk. Perhaps you've got to break the rules. So if you're a rule follower, maybe you'd be better in marketing or quality, innovation, packaging, business development, things where the rules are perhaps easier to define. In research, there is really an emotional connection to the work that you're doing. So there's an element of it that is going home every night and thinking about it. It's constantly with you. It's a lived experience. I've often said that of people that do PhDs by research, you know, I did PhD by research. We are the marathon runners of science. We're not special. We're just a different group of people. We're the ones that were prepared to take on a project because we wanted to, and work on the same topic for three and a half years, and to think about it every day to try and crack that problem. That for me is research. It's that drive to solve a problem. So it's not for everybody, and there's nothing wrong with it not being for everybody, because what's the point of doing research, particularly in industry, if you don't have that team of people around you that can realize the research that you've done? You can come up with the most wonderful of innovations, but if you don't have that team of engineers, manufacturing specialists, quality specialists, marketing teams, business development teams that can convert your innovation and idea into a product on the shelf or a service that can be marketed, then there is no purpose in having done what you did. There has to be someone that can then take that idea or that innovation and realize it into something useful. There's, I'm not taking away from pure research here. Research that is undertaken in an academic environment that is a quest for pure knowledge, that underpins all of the thought processes of every other researcher that works in that discipline. So that's also incredibly important. But, you know, I'm not a pure researcher. I love to think about pure research questions, but the things that really engage me in work are applied research. I like my research to generate solutions to problems or to generate new products or new ideas, things that are immediately useful. So that question around how do you know if you're right for research really comes down to thinking about what research is and whether you're the right sort of person to be wanting to do research.
Right. So I guess that's all about your definition of what research really is. And then you have to have a really good understanding of yourself. And that reminds me of the piece that you wrote for the Australian Council of Graduate Research, in which you really emphasized the importance of understanding yourself and then the influences that continue to shape you. And so what has been important to you throughout your career, and what opportunities have these values influenced you to take on?
Yeah, that article in the Australian Council of Graduate Research blog, I wrote that a couple of years ago. And it was, I guess, a story of discovery for me. It is me from the sort of nearing the end of my career, having the opportunity to reflect back and think about those things that I've probably always known were important, but have never really processed or spent time thinking about. And I'd say there's two key aspects to understanding yourself and being a good scientist. The first aspect is understanding your discipline. So, you know, I'm an applied chemistry graduate. My expertise is in chemistry. That's been the basis of my career. What makes me a good chemist in retrospect is not the ability to operate a particular instrument. My ability as a chemist and as a chemistry communicator, so communication is an important part of this equation, but my strength is that I am fluent in my discipline. The chemistry is no different to any other language. I speak chemistry. I think chemistry. I don't have to translate chemistry back into English in my head to be able to understand it. And you know, I'm not suggesting that I'm a savant or you know, that I'm Rain Man, but when people talk about molecules, I have to see the molecule. I see the molecule in my head. I don't see the English word that describes the molecule. So, you know, if by analogy we would say, what does the English word dog mean to you? Most people will see a dog in their head. They're not going to see the letters D-O-G. And I think that fluency in discipline is really important when you're embedded in your field of expertise, be it engineering, science, or any of the other disciplines. That ability to think in your discipline, to see molecules in your head, or to see the inner workings of a gearbox in your head, to see numbers move on a spreadsheet in your head because your expertise is in financial accounting. That is a core strength. You don't spend a whole lot of time trying to translate and connect English words to describe something that you never truly understood. So fluency in your field, treating it like a language, thinking of your field as a language is important. The second aspect are the people that surround you. Trying to be a decent person, treating others the way you want to be treated yourself, not treating them as fools because they don't understand exactly what you're talking about, because the chances are they don't understand what you're saying to them either. Everybody has some valuable contribution to the discussion that you're having at any given time. So remembering the contribution of others, and above all, recognizing the generosity of spirit and time of your sort of more senior colleagues. Over the years, you know, as a young guy, there were mentors who recognized things in me that I didn't recognize in myself. They gave me opportunities that I didn't even know existed. they set my career up. They didn't ask for anything in return. There's no payment involved other than, you know, they're academics, they've been paid to teach perhaps, but they did it because they recognised something in a younger scientist that they could develop. And so trying to pay it forward, it's often too late to go back and thank them for what they've done by the time you've realised what they've done for you. So paying it forward is a really important part of being a professional, being a good scientist or a good engineer, recognising that people have done extraordinary things to make you who you are.
That's amazing. So I guess like we should be able to like understand ourselves and then think of our disciplines, and then also we need to know that we need to realize that there are opportunities for us. And so in your article, you also encourage new scientists to see that sliding door moments for the opportunities that they are. And so how can students and graduates, they approach transitional steps in their career to ensure that they accept the opportunities that align with their values and then bring them closer to achieving their goals?
Yeah, look, the sliding doors are really hard to see when you're living the moment. They're the sort of things that you can see in the revision mirror. And I would encourage everybody. I've stepped through a number of doors over my career, and the most important advice I can give to younger scientists, early career researchers, and so on, the most important advice I can give you with the benefit of hindsight is when you're stepping through those doors, when you're going through a transition, make the step through the door something that is elegant. Make sure that you don't burn the bridges as you're going. It's quite easy in a moment of frustration, and I'll talk about why the frustration is there in a moment, but it's quite easy to leave a role and to be unpleasant about it, to do things in a way which is not nice, which leaves people feeling unhappy. That doesn't leave a good feeling long term. It doesn't allow you to reflect back on what you've achieved. You start to concentrate on the bad moment that you left the organization rather than all of the good things that you did in that organization. So I'd encourage anyone who's going to leave a job for a better opportunity or finish a course and move on to something new, change universities, do so with elegance. Thank the people that you're leaving behind. Thank them for the opportunity. You might not feel it at the time, but I hope you do in the future. So that stepping through the door, make it as elegant and pleasant as possible. I'm lucky in that the moments where I've transitioned from one role to another, from university to work and then between jobs, in most cases, I can go back and talk to my old colleagues. I get invited back for functions. I join their milestone celebrations. Even now, in organizations that I left 20 years ago, I still get welcomed back. And I don't just get welcomed back because I worked there. I get welcomed back as a colleague, as a mentor, for advice, which I will give freely. But I also get welcomed back as a friend. So, you know, you're part of the family, and that leaves you feeling good about the things that you've achieved in that organization. If you willingly go back and say, you know what, my time here had finished professionally, but I'm still happy to go back and enjoy and share in the success that that organization is still undergoing. And part of that success is partly my contribution. So I can look back at all of the experiences I've had and say, probably the ones I regret most are the ones that I'm least able to go back as a friend. You know, I'm least able to walk through the front door and have people smile. So that's one part of the sliding door moment. Recognizing when the sliding door moment comes is really difficult to see in the moment. You know, the first job is one that a lot of people go through. They come into a new job as a perhaps a new graduate with they're looking for a promotion or looking for new activities or new experiences. And that first week in the job is terrifying. I think, my God, how am I going to do this? I don't know anything about the business. I don't know anything about the job. Yes, I've got professional skills, but they have those periods during that learning curve where they think, I can't remember how to use the company's software. I can't remember how to use the company's telephone system. I can't remember the boss's name. There's a learning curve and a moment of fear, and that's particularly the case for new graduates going into their first job. A year, maybe 2 years later, they think they know everything. And in terms of their first job, they do know everything. They don't know everything about the business they're in, but they start to get what they think is the itchy feet syndrome. It's, you know, this company just doesn't appreciate me. I do all of this work and I'm still in this entry-level position. That's normal. So every new employee, particularly in a starting level position, goes into a job that is, it's a starting level position. And in that first year or two, the person's experience and capability grows far more rapidly than the job can change with it. And in a lot of cases, that company's fault that you've outgrown the requirements of the job. The other aspect of change is situations will change your perception of the job you're doing. You know, the arrival of your children, getting married, buying a house, that introduces stresses to yourself that make you see the job in a different life. The arrival of children in particular changes the way you see life. And so what you perceive at work as the boss is just giving me no responsibility anymore. There's a good chance that the boss has said, Paul's got a new baby at home. I'm going to cut him some slack. I'm not going to expect so much of him. I'm not going to give him that really demanding task because I know from personal experience that he needs a little bit of space in his life to deal with what he's going through at home. And so being able to think about your work environment in that context, looking at the people that are making decisions for you and understanding that, you know, maybe a change of job isn't really necessary. Well, maybe it is. But if you're going to change, thank the person for cutting you that slack. Thank them for the opportunity that got you to the level where you're ready to make a career jump. It's not a hard process, but it's one that's hard to see when you're in the moment. The end of your career, when you're looking back, you can cringe at all the things that you did and you wish you hadn't done, the things you wish you'd never said. That's life.
Yeah, so I guess the key takeaway for whether you're working in industry or whichever field you're working in is that you need to really know what you really need to know who you are, your understanding of yourself, and then also to be able to work together as part of a team. And then really appreciate the people around you and then appreciate the opportunities that your people have given you. And yeah, just thank them for what they've done to you. And I guess that bit of advice that you gave us has brought us to the end of our episode today. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time for today's episode.
My pleasure, Helen. It was lovely talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
DOSA Pharma acknowledges the traditional custodians of the various lands throughout Australia on which we connect today, and pays respect to elders past, present, and future.